to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here live from the Kintec Studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. JanPro, the leaders in commercial cleaning and janitorial. If your workplace demands a clean environment, contact JanPro for a free, no obligation quote. Visit janpro.ca. Now joining us on the line, she covers the Canucks for the Canadian Press. She is Gemma Karsten-Smith. Gemma, thanks for doing this as always. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you fine folks doing today?
I think we're doing pretty well. I don't want to speak for Drantz. I never know how he's doing, but I'm doing well. Final week of the regular season is here. We can see the playoffs so close now, and the Canucks get a big win over Edmonton in game 80 of the season. They haven't clinched the division just yet, but very, very likely to do so here over the next week. For you, what's the significance of that win on the weekend, Gemma?
I think it just showed that this team is still what we have believed this team to be for so long, right? We talked last week about how they needed to show what they really are over these last few games here. And I think that we saw that. We saw it was a decisive win. You didn't have the stars coming out to shine in the way they traditionally do. You don't have Patterson having a massive night. You don't have Hughes having a massive night, any of that. But you saw this team really rely on that structure that they've talked so much about and put up a good, gritty performance against a team that is very talented. Yeah, okay, there's no McDavid, but there's still a lot of really good guys on that team. Got good goaltending from DeSmith, and I think that it was a solid all-around performance and one that they're going to need those depth players in the playoffs. So to see those guys shine and really rise to the occasion is so crucial heading into this postseason run.
Yeah, I can tell you that the team was excited to have some of their depth players sort of rebuild their confidence. Could you get that sense just being around the team, covering the team the last few weeks that, there have been some guys maybe that have hoped to contribute a little more offensively?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it, is that some guys who've kind of been almost not eggshells, maybe more like pins and needles, just kind of like, oh, when's it my turn to like figure it out, you know? And we're seeing that. We're seeing guys kind of figure it out and kind of make those plays that we haven't been seeing. And it's huge. So many of these guys have been brought in for this purpose, to kind of bolster these stars. The suitors of the world that's what they're here for. They know that they're not here to be the guy. They're here to support the guy, right? So to see them step up and really fill those roles is huge. I think it's something this team has been needing a little bit more of down the stretch and will definitely need through the postseason.
You know, the other thing about that win on Saturday, Gemma, and this is kind of a big picture thing, but we were talking about it in the first segment. You know, now they've clinched the third highest point total for a season in the franchise history, right? The first two, obviously, the two President's Trophy winning seasons, and this is going to be number three. Now, you can look back at, you know, some of the West Coast Express teams. If ties hadn't existed then, would they have ended up racking up a similar amount of points? But, you know, either way, we're talking about this season being up there with just a handful or less than a handful of other years in the team's history. And, you know, I think coming into this season, we all agreed that this franchise could desperately use a playoff appearance, but to not just clear that bar, but to get to this kind of point where it's a playoff appearance, but it's also one of the best seasons in franchise history. How important do you think that is just for the health and the growth and stability of this franchise?
Would you say that everything has gone right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Going all the way back to Jim Rutherford's opening remarks on the season, that where everything had to go right for them to make the playoffs. I'd say everything went right. Like, I was listening to you guys as we were driving back from swimming lessons, and you're talking about that 50 win mark. Yeah, that's huge. Like you said, like that nice round number, and to be one of the only teams in franchise history that's done that, that would be a massive accomplishment. Yeah, it's not what they're striving for this season. They've got bigger things that they want to do, but those playoff runs, those playoff ambitions, you need confidence and to fuel that. This stretch here, being able to potentially capture the division title, being able to hit 50 wins, those are the little markers that will give you confidence. And it definitely gives the fan base confidence. We've talked so much about how the fan base is riddled by anxiety after years of being built up and throttled back to the earth. So, like, you to see this team at this point hitting those marks and getting those achievements, it's huge, not just for the guys who are playing the game, but the people in the stands as well.
Jim, are you getting a sense that there's buzz building in this market about the playoffs?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I have yet to see a car flag, which, thank goodness, but...
not a car flag fan?
No, car flags are so dumb. So dumb. I'm sorry.
That's like one of your hottest takes ever, Jim. What's your beef with car flags?
They look dumb. That's all. I think they're wasteful because I know you're not putting that car flag in your storage locker, because who actually has a garage these days, to save for what, another 9 years when they hold another playoff game here in the city? Like, that's going straight in the trash, and we've got enough trash in this world. We don't need car flags to add to it.
Counterpoint. I want to make a counterpoint, Gemma. I've always been frustrated. Let's go. I want to make a counterpoint, Gemma. I've always been frustrated that we don't decorate cars more ornately.
Really? That's always been a frustration of yours.
Something I've always thought about and been annoyed by.
Look, man, be the change you want to see in the world. Get out there. I've seen your car. It's not decorated ornately.
I know that, but it's because my wife thinks it would be weird to put a dragon on the side of it, despite my repeated insistence that it would be cool.
100% with your wife on this. Please do not put a dragon on your car. This is also coming from...
What about a painting of a car flag?
I'm now ignoring you. I'm surprised it's taken this long, but I'm just flat out ignoring you on your own radio show. This is also coming from a household that has one of those super dorky, like, double-seat electric bikes.
Mm.
Like, the electric mini bike, essentially, to carry our children around on. So, like, take it all with a grain of salt.
Hey, that's like a prereq in Mount Pleasant. So
yeah, exactly.
I don't have one, but I'm in the market. Let's put it that way.
I'm jealous. That sounds great.
Oh, we'll talk off air, we've got a good situation.
Can I get one if I don't have kids?
It's up to you.
Can absolutely. I think Wallace would fit perfectly.
Yeah.
Anyway, the market is really into the
there we go.
Chaos. Yes. Hmm.
I feel like I'm starting to hear about it from, like, my friends' moms and stuff.
Totally.
You know? Yeah. So to me, that always is my barometer for buzz. I mean, what do you think game one's going to be like? Like, what should we be looking forward to over the course of the next week?
I think that people are genuinely excited to celebrate this team, right? I think that part of that comes from the expectations being so low heading into this year. Let's call it what it is. This team was not expected to be here. I personally thought they would be a bubble team at best in terms of, like, being on that playoff bubble. For them to be here on the precipice, there's your word, Drance, clinching the Pacific Division, like, that's huge, and people are excited to celebrate. I think it's going to be loud in Rogers. I think it's going to be loud around the arena. I think this is going to be some of the best tips servers in that area are going to take home for quite a while, and that's great. It's good for the city. It's good for sports fans. All of those things. I think that the vibes will be high, and they should be. This is an accomplishment to be celebrated. I'm hoping that it's something that fans get to celebrate for a while, and it's not a kind of one and done here.
Yeah, that's the big thing for me as well. I mean, you're right, because the atmosphere is going to be fantastic for games one and two. And then, you know, I hope there's a game five and maybe a game seven in the first round. But I hope it goes a lot longer than that. And then there's more opportunities.
Death Cab for Cutie concert.
We'll see in Nashville. Yeah. But in terms of kind of on the ice, so they've all but wrapped up the division. You know, as you said, they kind of answered some questions about their identity, got back on the right foot with that game in Edmonton. Two games remaining now, Calgary and Winnipeg. What are some of your big on ice questions for this team going into the playoffs right now?
I think the biggest question is, how does Demko look? We should see him back in net tomorrow night. I think that he seems healthy from everything we've seen out of practice. It's a question of making sure that he's as mentally ready to go as possible, and not in terms of being ready for the playoffs. I mean more about like trusting his body. He talked when he came back from one of his previous injuries about the mental scar tissue. And I think that it's going to be huge to make sure that that kind of mental rest is shaken off as quickly as possible, because it's go time. These are big games. Not obviously the Calgary and Winnipeg games aren't big in terms of the standings, but they're big in terms of getting this team ready. There's been so much talk about momentum and having to be playing playoff hockey now. I think that's going to be even more crucial if there is a little bit of a break before the games actually start.
Gemma, do you buy that the Canucks have the Edmonton Oilers number?
Ooh, good question. I think they do this season, honestly. Mm-hmm. And that is not something I expected to say on what, like October 15th of 2023?
Yeah,
because
nope.
It's just not what I expected. I think that that could change if the Oilers get out to a massive start in the playoffs. I mean, they beat the LA Kings two years in a row, and to see them do it a third time, I think would be a massive confidence boost if that's the way all the cards fall. I don't think that the Oilers are going to be an easy out in any way, shape, or form, and the Oilers at playoff time are a different team than the Oilers we've seen so far this season. And that's saying a lot, because we've seen that team rally. They are the Phoenix of the NHL this year. They were literally in the ashes. And I think that they'll be just a juggernaut heading into the postseason here. So it's not a team that the Canucks want to come up against. And I don't blame them, because McDavid is McDavid. And the stars will fall into line behind him.
Gemma, we've got a bunch of people texting in saying that they have, in fact, been holding on to their car flag. We've got a couple of people saying since 2015. Ryan in Surrey saying he has his original car flag from 2003. It's all beat up. He says, I only fly them on playoff game day. So there are a lot of people appealing for special permission to fly these saved car flags here.
So, sorry, Gemma, can I handle this one? I think if
Please
you
do.
Have a car flag from a cursed playoff year, like 2003 or 2015.
Well, they're all cursed. They've never won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, but at least like those are two of the most painful playoff years in my memory.
2015, I mean, whatever.
Are you serious?
Nobody thought they were going. Like, who thought they were winning the Cup in 2015?
They lost to one of the worst playoff teams the last 20 years in the Sedins' last chance of advancing.
I was too hurt by that
time. Incredible ways to show that you're a fan of this team. Putting an old tattered piece of nylon on your car has to be the worst one. I'm sorry. Go get yourself a real nice, like, it doesn't even have to be a jersey, but, like, go get a nice new piece of merch, go paint your face, there's so many things you can do. A piece of nylon on a probably bent, garbagey piece of plastic on your nice shiny car, that you're just disrespecting yourself and the team.
This is fantastic.
I like Gemma. I like that Gemma's hits are now brought to you by the merchandise department at Rogers Arena.
Yeah,
go
yeah.
buy a nice new piece of merch.
Go down to the team store.
Not
replace
from a cursed
merch.
Playoff run year.
Well, I don't know what else to say.
Look, Gemma, all I always say is I was going to press you for like suggestions for alternatives to car flags, and you did the job yourself. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Go find yourself some face paint.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bought my first car flag in my adult life yesterday, and I'm hyped. Texts in Clay.
Oh God, Trent, I'm embarrassed for you.
For me?
No. That was somebody who texted it in.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a Trent. All right, Gemma.
But you can also feel free to be embarrassed for me at any time.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
it's relevant.
Yeah. All right, Gemma, this was fantastic. Thank you as always. We will next time we talk. I don't know if the playoffs will have started, but the regular season will have ended. It's very, very exciting. We'll talk to you soon, Gemma.
All right. Have a great day, guys.
Thank you. That is Gemma Karsten-Smith from the Canadian Press with an absolute fire. I've never heard a like that strong anti-car flag take from anyone before. That's fantastic.
Let your car freak flag fly is my opinion.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it.
But don't pull it out from a cursed season, man. That's but like if it's playoff merch from 2003, like
so what are your
approved
playoff years? They're all cursed.
No, they're not.
2011 has good vibes.
2011 definitely has good vibes.
They lost in heartbreaking fashion in the Stanley Cup final.
But it was fun. They went deep. That team was cool. Here's the following years of Canucks playoff history are not cursed. 1975, 1982.
Okay, get your 1975 car flag out.
1991, 1993, 1994, of course.
Yeah.
I'll add 1995. They got to the second round.
So dumb.
2003, that's cursed, even though they won a round. And then I'd say like 09, 2010, fine. 11, fine. 12 even, I'll live with.
No. 12 was crushingly disappointing.
It was, but the Kings were a juggernaut.
Yeah, they still won the President's Trophy and then won one game in the playoffs.
Yeah, but Daniel Sedin didn't return until Game 3, and they changed goalies.
Stop making excuses.
No, the 2012 for me doesn't hurt the way. Well, maybe it's because I was like emerging as not a fan at that point, but like I don't think 2012 should hurt the way like 13 and 15 do.
I disagree. I think 2012 hurts way more than 2015. 2015, I think people that thought that team was going on a run were fooling themselves.
Well, no,
I had zero expectations.
I agree with you, but I thought it was going to be like a cool swan song for the Twins, especially when they drew this pathetic Calgary Flames team in the first round. And then
Miller had an unbelievable year that year.
Who did?
Ryan Miller.
Yeah, he was like hurt. It was Eddie Lack who carried them into the playoffs, Dom.
No. Really?
Yeah, he got hurt in February, and Eddie Lack went on a 2-month heater.
That's why Dom's a professional right there.
Miller was so good for the Canucks.
Yeah, but then they put him back. They brought him back too quickly from injury, and he couldn't move side to side.
Ah, you're right.
And then they took the Brandon McMillan-driven 3-0 lead in Game 6 in Calgary, and Miller couldn't make the side-to-side saves that he needed to, and like Michael Ferland just destroyed them as they came back. This was also the series in which they choked up in Game 1, where they benched the Twins.
I'm not saying I'm not saying
so dumb.
I'm not
truly.
Saying it wasn't a bad loss. It was. It's just like it's hard to get that upset over about a first round loss.
A team that,
if you don't think the team's going anywhere,
the team wasn't in like a championship window. But they also like for me, it's that at least they lost to like an elite team that was going to win two of the next three Stanley Cups, even if we couldn't see it at that juncture. Like. They lost to a Calgary Flames team that had to get a lot better to only win one more playoff round in the next 7 years. Like, that Calgary Flames team sucked. Probably the worst playoff team of the last decade.
So dumb.
I just, for me, it's so much more about the quality of the Canucks team than the quality of who they lost to.
I get
you know
it,
what I mean?
You're going to lose in the first round. One of Dallas or Vegas is going to lose in the first round. Most likely. Assuming they match up against one another. You know what I mean? Like, is that going to hurt for Dallas if they lose to Vegas? For sure. Is it going to be unfortunate that Vegas didn't get a chance to mount a more significant title defense? Like, absolutely. But when we look back on the history of those teams, it's not going to be like, we're not going to be able to call that like a painful missed opportunity.
It's just, but you have to take it in sequence, right? With the crushing disappointment of the 2011 final, right? Win the President's Trophy again.
Yeah, but they... We all knew.
People knew it wasn't the same.
We all knew that
team.
It was like a zombie stagger that whole
Still,
season. That was the flip the switch season, man.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. We all kind of knew that team was flagging down the stretch.
I just think 2012 and 2013 both.
Well, 2013 is different. 2013 was a wild disappointment.
It just both brutal. And again, it's not because, like, yeah, they lost to the Kings. The Kings were a wicked team, but it just felt like, okay, it's not happening. You know what I mean? They're in this championship window, and it's not happening. That's what it felt like to me in 2012. So it's not no positive memories.
Well, no, not from that playoffs.
So if we're talking about cursed playoff series, playoff runs.
12 is cursed, but for me, 2015 is worse because of the caliber of the opponent the Canucks lost against and the fact that it was the Twins' last opportunity to play in the postseason.
So I guess the least cursed playoff run would probably have to be 1994.
Yes.
Right?
I mean, yeah.
Like, low seed.
How do you even quantify that?
Well, I don't know, Dom, but we're going to try.
Well,
do our best.
I would argue it's 1982.
Okay, I can see that, except that they got swept.
True. But the thing about the 1993-94 team that people forget is, like, that Canucks team was a 96-point team 2 years before, 101-point team the prior year, and then Kirk McLean just, like, struggled all regular season. Troy Gamble actually started more games than McLean did all season, and then McLean got hot, the Flames caught the flu, and the Canucks ransacked through. Like, I guess the thing is that that team, especially after adding Hedekin and Jeff Brown on the blue line, was, like, sneaky good.
Mm-hmm.
They were way better than their record. They were more like last year's Florida Panthers or the 2019 Blues, like one of those teams that rolls into the playoffs with a depressed record that doesn't really reflect their true talent. Vegas might be that one team this year, right? But they're far more imposing than they seem. Like, that was that year. The 1982 team, like, the Oilers choked in against the Kings.
Against LA,
the miracle
on
Manchester. Yep. Literally one of the most improbable comebacks in hockey history that cleared the decks for them, right? Like, every good team just melted away. And so the Canucks end up making the Stanley Cup final with, like, a deeply mid team that actually at no point defeated a team that had a better goal differential. Like, it was this, like, miracle Cinderella run.
The seas parted for them, basically.
That's what I'm saying. Yep. And what's crazy is if you go back and look at the history of it, this really crummy Pittsburgh Penguins team was leading in a decisive game five against the New York Islanders. And the Islanders got a John Tinelli goal with like 90 seconds to go, because it was only a five game first round back then, maybe 90 seconds to go. John Tinelli ties the game in game five and they win it in overtime. But it's like, they were that close. The Islanders were that close, and the Canadiens, to both going out in the first round. Like, you literally, that is the most seas parted.
The least cursed
playoff run this team's ever enjoyed.
I can buy it. The sweep is a bit tough, but yeah, I can buy that. All right, Fish Dancer texted, I'm going to go get a binder and organize my car flag collection in terms of cursedness. Somebody else texted, how can I hate myself if it isn't a cursed flag? Which is a great point.
How can, that's true.
You kind of want to embrace, like, the battle scars of the past going in.
The scar tissue, as Rick Tockett would call it.
Absolutely. So maybe get those 2003 ones out.
Yeah. You know what?
2003 was tough. That was tough.
We'll cut this soon. But I do think embracing the scar tissue in particular, I think requires that if you do end up going to a playoff game, if you're a Canucks fan, I do think it's important to not be nervous. I think there's
live in the moment. Enjoy the moment.
I do think there's a big edge that visiting teams get in some Canadian barns, Toronto, Vancouver, where the fan base is, like, pretty confident that the hockey gods hate them. Where if, like, something goes wrong or it's tied 0-0 and the building gets a little quiet and you can, like, feel the weight building. Like, I've always thought that that's a meaningful disadvantage that the Canucks have to deal with come playoff time. Like, you get the first goal, the crowd gets going, and but if you can manufacture that in a tight game, that's the sweet spot.
All right, we will wrap it up there, but quickly, this from Rick Tockett per our own Randeep Janda. Tockett on Thatcher Demko: he's healthy, he's ready to go. We'll have more on that, more from Rick Tockett later. Take your texts as well. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
No, car flags are so dumb.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
No karaoke today, Dom?
So I'm just making a graphic for Sportsnet 650 on Instagram if you want to throw us a follow.
Not on Instagram.
We had someone in our inbox, and please excuse me for not remembering who signed it, who was referring to the band that sings this song, Dom, as Meatwood Flack.
Fakewood Mac.
No, I like Meatwood Flack.
Okay.
Yep. Just telling you.
Noted.
Yep.
It's good.
Meatwood?
This is like a signature tune for us.
It really is.
Nothing gets you in the mood for Canucks talk like this. It is Canucks talk, Sportsnet 650, Jamie Dodd, Thomas Durant.
Might I remind you, it was Thomas who asked to put this in the regular rotation.
That's true. No, I don't have a problem with it. I like it. Canucks talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. I want to get into a little bit of the various scenarios and permutations of playoff seeding and all of that in a second here. But as I mentioned, the quote from Randeep Janda from Rick Tocchet that Demko is healthy, he's ready to go. And then Tocchet, I believe, also confirming more directly even that Demko will start tomorrow's game against the Calgary Flames, final home game of the season for the Canucks. So obviously massive to get Demko back. Not a surprise that it's going to be tomorrow. That's kind of been the obvious game for a little bit here now. Now, you said you would probably lean towards playing him both of the final two games, right? And there's a good chance that that last one doesn't really mean anything if they clinched the division ahead of time. Which they're, you know, have a very, very good chance to do. But this
I want to see what the playoff schedule was like, though. But, like, if you've got a game Tuesday and then you don't play again until Friday, and then you don't play again until the 23rd, like, isn't the point of getting reps before the playoffs that you, like, go in some sort of artificially manufactured rhythm?
That's a lot different than if it's the 18th in Winnipeg, and then you're flying home to play the 20th in Vancouver, which sounds like that's off the table. You know what I mean?
So, like, is one game in 8 days after not playing
is
for
that
6 weeks
enough to be
is
in
that
rhythm?
Sufficient?
I think that's a fair question.
You know, I don't know. I would see if the playoffs begin on the 23rd, as it's been suggested, by a guy in Friedman who's not suggesting it if he doesn't know. Typically. The fact is that, you know, you're going to, like, why not? What's the downside? Get a guy a couple games in a week.
Yeah, because you're going to get him the rest off and the recovery period off after that, right?
And you're already going into the playoffs with him having played 50. I mean, that's you know, you're talking the sweet spot. You're talking, you don't really have him hit game 70 anyway this on the season unless you're really having a good time. Unless you've really gone pretty deep.
Yes, absolutely. You'd have to be pretty far into the playoffs for that number to become a reality. But, you know, I asked Gemma about, what her kind of remaining questions are for the season here. Only two games, but your questions to see sorted out on the ice before the playoffs. And I think clearly number one is Demko's status. Not his status now, because we know he's ready to go, but just how sharp is he, right? How close to peak Demko is he? How much has the rest helped him? How quickly is he able to find that rhythm? And, you know, how quickly can he be, again, that peak version or something close to it of Thatcher Demko? And I think you probably have a better chance of getting him there. And certainly you're able to gather more information about, like, where he is if you play him both of these games.
Right. Well, I mean, on the other hand, like, whether Demko's 98% or 75%,
no,
he's playing.
Yeah, it's not like you're going away from Demko to Casey to Smith, but it's more information for, I think, Ian Clark in terms of, like, how he's working with Thatcher Demko, right?
For sure.
As you said, if he's healthy, obviously Thatcher Demko is the guy going into the playoffs. So good news from Canucks practice.
Well, and, you know, we brought up 2015, right? 2015 occurred. Where with the Miller Lack dynamic, we talked 2013 where Schneider got hurt on that Brandon Saad shorthanded chance with like six games remaining ahead of the playoffs, and then 2020 when the team seemed right on the precipice of making it for sure, Jacob Markstrom got hurt and Demko sort of struggled in his first 10 days as a full time NHL starter, and then Demko gets hurt this year. I mean, it's not hyperbole to say that it's been 12 years since the Vancouver Canucks went into the postseason without some sort of injury-related question involving their starting goaltender. Now, the club seems very confident, and Demko seems pretty confident that, you know, they've had time, they've charted this aggressive recovery course and that he'll be 100%. But, you know, it's still a lower body injury to a goaltender, right? It's whether he's available to play or not, you know, we're not going to know whether or not it's a thing where the rest benefited him or whether it's like a quarterback who injured their throwing arm. Until we see him in a game, he's looked healthy in practice. Like when I've seen him at morning skate and stuff, mm-hmm. he looks Demko like, but this is a goaltender whose athletic ability, his ability to explode side to side, the like high effort nature of his positioning game and how intimidating it is when he's able to play and move like that. You know, that's all crucial stuff to his success. So look, this team's going to need Demko to be Demko if they're going to make noise in the postseason. We all know this. And yet, you know, I do think the injury, more than anything, and we've been saying it for a month and a half now, just introduces a little bit more uncertainty into the Canucks crease. And hopefully a couple performances this week can sort of put those uncertainties to bed a little bit.
That would be nice. Okay, I did just want to return to the playoff forecast. We kind of zipped through it in the whiteboard in the first segment, but just to kind of lay out what to watch for this week, how the different scenarios could play out. So, of course, as mentioned, Canucks only need a point to win the division or for Edmonton to drop a point. Edmonton plays San Jose tonight with McDavid in the lineup. We'll see. San Jose, not the most daunting opponent, but the Canucks don't need to worry about Edmonton. They can take care of business tomorrow against Calgary. I think the more interesting scenario is who their first-round playoff opponent is going to be. As I said, a 72% chance per Dom's model that it's Nashville, 19% chance for Vegas. It's not listed, but that implies about a 9% of what's remaining chance for L.A., Nashville plays their final game of the season tonight in Pittsburgh. They only need a point. And if they get a point, I believe they are locked in to the first wild card spot because they're going to have the regulation win tiebreaker. So if that game goes beyond regulation, Nashville will lock up the first wild card spot, which sets up almost certainly them playing the Canucks. And of course, important to note, the Penguins find themselves in the midst of that Eastern Conference Turtle Derby for the final playoff spot. So they desperately need a win tonight. So that's some added context for Nashville's final game of the season. I mean, interesting to note, of course, and we've touched on it, that, yeah, Nashville's done after tonight. So they're going to have a lot of time to just sit around and wait and see who their ultimate playoff opponent is.
Which could be an edge. Rest versus rust.
Although if you get to, you play Monday and then you don't start till Tuesday and the other team still like had from Thursday to Tuesday off, I don't know if that's a huge edge for Nashville.
Well, especially
for a
team that's been rolling.
Yeah. And it's not like you're catching, it's not like you have a week off and the other team has a quick turnaround at that point. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like the Canucks still get a chance to rest. You've just been rested longer, but I'm not sure how, once you get past like 3 days of rest, I'm not sure how much every extra day, I think there's rapidly diminishing returns on your extra days of rest there. But anyways, if Nashville loses in regulation, Vegas can pass them with two wins in their final two games. They've got a couple of cupcakes, Chicago and Anaheim on Tuesday and Thursday. So if Nashville loses in regulation, then all of a sudden Vegas very, very live to take over that first wild card spot. And then L.A. is in the mix here as well, right? They're only a point ahead of Vegas in the standings. They play the Wild tonight. They host Chicago on Thursday in their final playoff game, or sorry, their final regular season game. They also have the tiebreaker over Vegas. So I do think, I was running through this, and based on all the tiebreakers, I don't think the 2-7 matchup, so like the Canucks versus the first wild card, can be Vancouver and L.A. Because I think if L.A. falls below Vegas, they will also necessarily drop below Nashville and cross over to the other side. I could be wrong about that. That's just my reading of all the various tiebreakers and everything. So with that in mind, it then becomes the only way the Canucks could play L.A. would be if they don't clinch the division at this point, which would be pretty, pretty brutal. So it's looking overwhelmingly likely to be either Nashville or Vegas, and tonight's result will tell us an awful lot. If Nashville picks up that point, it's done and dusted. If they lose in regulation, then all of a sudden you're looking at Vegas and thinking, okay, they've got a pretty good chance to do this here.
Well, especially because Vegas has such a cupcake schedule.
That's
the rest of the way.
That's the huge thing, right? And you got to think they're motivated to avoid what you were talking, the dynamic you were talking about, right? Of going over to the side of the bracket where your first round opponent is Dallas, and then you're staring at potentially Colorado in the second round.
Well, we'll see. I mean, one thing that I thought was interesting was that the Oilers came out and played like they cared, right? They definitely wanted to beat the Canucks, so I don't want to minimize this, but tactically, they didn't actually handle the game like they really cared about winning the division. And what I mean by that is down 2-1, right? They didn't pull their goalie until 2 minutes left, right? If you were really focused, if you really believed that it meant a lot to win the division,
you had to do it.
You would treat yourself as being down by 1.5 goals, right? The goal is not to tie the game. The goal is to win the game in regulation, right? Which shifts the sort of balance of how you should chase the lead in a trailing 2-1 situation. They didn't need one goal in that circumstance. They needed two, meaning that really you're looking to pull your goalie at 4.5, 5 minutes remaining in the game, which they didn't even seem to consider. It didn't feel like a game where they would have pulled their goalie if they were tied.
I think the other interesting thing from Edmonton's kind of perspective is not playing McDavid on Saturday, and then he gets in against the Sharks. Because I kind of thought, okay, he doesn't play on Saturday. That's fine, right? Because the division is the division. It's not the most important thing. But at that point, you lose that game. You're pretty much locked in to second at that point.
Mm.
Like, do you even bring him back before the playoffs?
Yeah.
So it's a little surprising to me that he's right back in the next game.
Well, I mean, apparently he was, I didn't go and see it, but he was power skating before the Canucks did morning skate on Saturday in Edmonton. A bunch of the Edmonton media were there to watch, and apparently was going really hard. So I think it was one, I don't think it's one where he's, like, far off or anything. I just think, you know, the Oilers probably are looking at it as like, okay, get to 100 assists. Let's put that in the record book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can play 12 minutes tonight and power play, right? And then you get game 82 off. And that makes sense to me. I'm sure the Leafs will try to do something similar with Matthews, right? Where get to 70. It's amazing.
Yep.
Do you remember when Brock Besser was 4 goals back of Auston Matthews at Christmas? They were the number 1 and 2 in the NHL.
And we were doing Rocket Richard odds updates.
Besser had 24 and Matthews has 28. Besser's had a remarkable season. Like, there, you know, I'm absolutely
40 goals.
I'm absolutely not denigrating 40 goals. It's unbelievable. It's just like Matthews went on and scored 42 more.
Yeah, from that point.
Which again, this is just, it's mind-blowing. 70 goals is mind-blowing. Like, that's mid-90s Timu Solani stuff. Anyway.
The offensive explosion in general, because the 100 assist thing, which has gotten a lot of attention, and just for how rarely been done.
And there's going to be two guys who
do it.
There's
going to be two guys who do it this year. Right? And then you get into the Matthews thing. You know, you look at the Quinn Hughes multi-year numbers that he's putting up, right up there with Paul Coffey and Bobby Orr. I know we all are mostly aware of it, but like, we are truly living through a new offensive explosion here. This year has been wild.
Thank goodness.
Yes. Yeah. Is anyone complaining?
No.
Is anyone awesome. Like, oh, I can't watch this. This is terrible.
Quinn Hughes has enough points that he would have won the Art Ross 10 years ago.
Easily. quite easily.
Like, thank goodness.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. The game is way better this way, as opposed to just a team that outshoots opponent regardless of quality will eventually have the dam break because both goaltenders are going to stop 92% of shots faced. This is way better than that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, in the 650 Dunbar Lumber text line, is there something you wanted to hit here? I wanted to read a text.
No.
Okay.
I want to hit the text that you read.
All right, that's great. We will hear from Rick Tocchet, by the way, in the final segment of the show, his comments after the team's practice. All right, this text comes in the context of Mikheyev's lack of finish being a concern for the top six. How much does it hurt the Canucks to not even have the possibility of Jonathan Lekaramäki coming in as a black ace? So I think there's two things in that text. I think Mikheyev's spot in the top six is absolutely 100% legitimate to be concerned about, and we can talk about that. I don't see, even if he was available, Lekaramäki as being really a realistic solution to that problem, right? Because that's just such a difficult position to put a young player who's had this incredible bounce back season in Sweden in, asking him to step into your top six in a playoff series and kind of like fix your scoring woes. But the point about Mikheyev and what are the options behind Mikheyev? Where do they go if they decide it's untenable? I think that's a very fair question to bring up. And, you know, Tocchet has kind of in recent days reasserted how much he likes the duos format in his forward lines, right? So you've got Pettersson and Hoglander, Miller, Besser, and then Joshua and Garland as kind of a non-traditional two-winger duo. And that's great, but part of the theory with the duo thing is, okay, you keep those duos together, and then you can kind of move other guys into that third spot, in or out or up or down the lineup, based on who's hot and who's not right now. But the thing is, okay, let's say going into game one of the playoffs, Rick Tocchet wanted to move Ilya Mikheyev out of that spot with Elias Pettersson and Nils Höglander. Like, who's next up? Is it Sam Lafferty?
It is, probably.
Because I don't know if that's solving a lot of your concerns about finish and touch and, you know, ability to keep up with Elias Pettersson and Nils Höglander. So I like the duo thing in theory. I think it makes a lot of sense. I like the lines they sent out there on Saturday. But it's also totally fair, I think, to have those concerns about, one, Ilya Mikheyev's performance, and two, what's the plan B behind Ilya Mikheyev?
So let's imagine my favorite parabola concept and talk about this as a continuum on a bell curve, okay?
Of course.
Are you comfortable with that?
Boy, am I. If I wasn't comfortable with you talking about bell curves, one my day- life would be hell.
One day you'll be free from the bell curve talk. And you can go right to Philadelphia because you'll have Liberty Bell Curve. There you go. Now you're mad.
That was
now you're upset.
I would say that was above the Lord of the Rings one, but below the emo one. Narrowly above the Lord of the Rings one.
Okay. So that was in the fat part of the bell curve.
Yes.
On the left side of it, right, which is how do things go badly for the Canucks in the playoffs? I do still think personnel limitations in terms of this team's ability to generate offense is going to be sort of the deficiency that might need to be overcome. So in sort of the far left side of the bell curve, you have a scenario where through bad luck or the other team's execution, the Canucks don't score first for like five straight games and struggle to overcome that, as they often have over the course of the season, especially if the first period ends and they're trailing. Doesn't matter whether it's Vegas or Nashville. For me, that's like on the left side of the bell curve, that's sort of the downside case you can make against the Canucks, is like not enough speed on the back end, maybe not enough like top nine caliber offensive contributors, 5-on-5 for this team, especially if the power play's only running at a pedestrian clip the way it has for much of the second half. On the far right side of it is this team figures out one more piece in their top six, like one more contributor raises his game and starts to like help them drive bottom line results, but also do the Pius Suter thing and drive an outcome where you're more likely to score or to at least outscore your opponent, whether or not you're getting credit for the goals and the assists. And as I sort of think through it, you know, the Mikheyev piece of the top six, and we saw it again in Edmonton, you know, there was that glorious Hughes feed in the first period. It was like their only good chance in the first half of the first period, and Mikheyev couldn't quite find the handle. There were a couple others, and it's just like, you can just tell when it's like a dangerous buildup and then it ends up on Mikheyev's stick, and we're all watching it going like, okay, that's too bad. Yeah, we all are, and that's okay. Like, I've always had my concerns about Mikheyev's offensive contributions, even when he was feasting alongside Kuzmenko and Pettersson. But I also think the way that he's performed for much of this season, you know, is largely a product of reduced speed and on and on. And I think he'll bounce back and be better next year. That doesn't mean I think he's a great fit right now in the top six. When I sort of think through the options, like who could do that for the Canucks, you know, Lekker Mäki barely registers for me, to be totally honest with you. Right? Because
the team has done nothing to indicate that that's an option.
Well, no, I mean, it's not an option because he's going to go play for Sweden.
Yeah.
Right? But also, you know, he debuted and played six American League games, and it's not like he lit the world on fire. He had two shots a game, which is okay, given, you know, it's not bad for a 19-year-old. Like, that's really good. Don't get me wrong. But it's not. Like, I don't know that Lekker Mäki is going to come into the American League next year and be one of the most dangerous goal scorers in the league from day one. I think he'll get there. I won't be surprised if he has a wild tear in like January and February in the American League next year. I honestly won't be surprised if he comes into camp and challenges to make the team. So don't get me wrong. But also, he had one goal in six games in the AHL. And some of the reports that I heard was like, yeah, you know, his size, like it wasn't like tickety boo right off the bat. And if you look at it, both of his points came in his fifth and sixth games in the AHL, during which he averaged three shots a game. Like, it's an adjustment. You're not going to throw this guy into the top six in the playoffs and be like, he's going to help us break the offensive deadlock. So
especially not in the context of a player who had such a setback in their draft plus 1 year and then is enjoying this incredible resurgence. You don't want to derail that with a Hail Mary in the NHL playoffs.
Let him have a good summer, put on weight, see where he's at training camp, probably still send him down to the American League to start, give him through Christmas on the Archdeep Baines. Don't worry so much about your performance. Just keep putting on weight and strength and working with our skills staff. And then hopefully he's an option for this team in the second half of next year. Right? Like that's how this team likes to approach things anyway. They want to be, they don't want to like let these guys over-ripen, but they're definitely happy with the returns on Podkolzin and Hoglander having put in the time that they did with Jeremy Colliton and people in Abbotsford. For me, Lafferty is unlikely to fit that, like, he's the key that unlocks the top six. One guy, however, sticks in my mind. Well, two guys, but one guy to a greater extent, and it's Vasily Podkolzin. Now, Podkolzin has not had a particularly starry year in terms of production at either the American or the NHL level, American League or an NHL level. But this is a guy who has a history of producing at a far higher clip come playoff time than he does in the regular season. And that makes sense with the style of his game. It's also not like he's seen a ton of opportunity with offensive skilled line mates over the course of this 19-game stint in which he's only managed to assist. And yet most nights he looks impactful. I thought he was good again against Edmonton. I thought that size mattered for the Canucks in the bottom six against Edmonton. That would be sort of one possibility that looms in my imagination. And here's the other one. It's Connor Garland.
You're splitting it up. You're splitting up the duo, though, then, the Garland-Joshua duo.
I know.
And then as you go back, because I think the problem we're trying to solve here is don't be a two-line team. And I feel like if you're moving Garland up, then you're back to being a two-line team. Now, maybe you'd prefer to have two lines that are clicking really well than three lines that you're kind of worried about. You know what I mean? But I think the idea of putting Lindholm with Joshua and Garland is that you can have three lines that you feel really good about. But is it like the counterpoint? Is it, well, do you feel really good about a scoring line with Ilya Mikheyev on it?
Well, can you afford to have Pettersson play minutes where the things he does are less likely to result in goals for you?
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like that to me, that's sort of the intractable thing that the club kind of has to work out because, you know, the Lindholm, Garland, Joshua line was good. You know, they limited Draisaitl effectively, and yet, you know, Lindholm and Joshua were outshot 7-10 in their 5-on-5 minutes. They were out attempted 9-20. It wasn't like we just saw that line go out and do the things that they were doing with Teddy Bluger in January and February. You know, they get the goal, but it's, and they had that awesome synchronized hug, which made me think, hey, chemistry must be instant between these three. Because that was a quality synchronized hockey hug.
It was really good.
It was so cool. But it doesn't change the fact that, like, that wasn't... It's not as if that line got put together and got shot out of a cannon, and right away it was like, this is the premium version of that line that carried the Canucks in December. Like, it really wasn't that. So maybe you give it a little more time. You know, I'm not saying you go away from it tomorrow.
I think you try Podkolzin first.
Yeah, maybe.
That's what I would do.
Maybe. But also, if you like Podkolzin there, like, you don't think he can help you with Joshua Lindholm?
Podkolzin? Then you're missing a guy. You're missing the playmaker.
You don't have a driver.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, this is the tough sort of question that the club has to handle. Anyway, on the far right side of the bell curve, what happened to the Canucks that they were able to figure out, you know, and find, like, unlock a different level even come playoff time? For me, it's they figure out a way to make that Pettersson line hum and really outscore opponents 5-on-5. If they can unlock that I think there's something there. The Garland option comes with significant drawbacks. The Podkolzin one, I just don't know if he's at that level. The Lafferty-Mikheyev ones, I think we know what to expect.
We got to go to break. I do just want to pass this along before we go into the next segment, and we'll hear from Rick Tocchet. Some reports from Rogers Arena, from Canucks practice, including from Noah Strang at the Daily Hive, that some Amazon cameras are there at Canucks practice, and according to Noah Strang and others, seem to be following Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
Specifically, of course, the announcement recently that Amazon's going to be doing a kind of behind-the-scenes series where they follow, I think it was 10 to 12 NHL stars for a season. So looks like Quinn Hughes could be among the, not official here, but just reading the tea leaves, that Quinn Hughes could be among the
candidates. I can tell you he is, and he spent the off day with them yesterday, or in and around Vancouver, getting some scenics and such. So
something to look forward to for Canucks fans. That should be really interesting.
I knew that. I didn't realize it was of interest.
Really? You don't think Canucks fans would be interested in that?
I honestly, it just like didn't occur to me.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
The official report from Thomas Drantz.
I hear there was a trip to Granville Island on Sunday.
There you go.
So lots to look forward to.
All right. Something to look forward to for Canucks fans, including our next segment, our last segment of the show here. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here, live from the Kintech studio. JanPro, the leaders in commercial cleaning and janitorial. If your workplace demands a clean environment, contact JanPro for a free, no-obligation quote. Visit janpro.ca. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. As mentioned, Canucks practice at Rogers Arena today. They host Calgary tomorrow in the final home game of the season for the Vancouver Canucks, and potentially a chance to wrap up the Pacific Division tomorrow, depending on what happens with Edmonton. It could already be in the bag by the time the Canucks play tomorrow. But coming off that big win on the weekend, looking ahead to the playoffs, here is Rick Tocchet speaking to the media after practice.
I gotta think about it for a while. All right, he's playing.
What do you think is a perfect scenario for him, Rick, leading into the playoffs?
Well, he's healthy. He's ready to go. So, you know, obviously, he's definitely going to play tomorrow, and we'll go from there. That's really what it goes down to. He's looked really good in practice.
Sorry. How much does Thursday's decision, how much is it based on if you've clinched before that? Do you want to leave guys at home? Do you want to make sure that if Thatcher plays, there's a full group in front of him? Like, how do you?
Well, there's so many scenarios right now, like, spinning my head. Like, honestly, we're just honestly worried about tomorrow, and then we'll deal from then. That's the way you got to look at it, because, you know, who does this, what, you know, there's a lot of what ifs, right? So, but, you know, Thatch will be in tomorrow, and it's a big game for us. That's the way we approach it.
Is it hard? You know, this group has got to be anxious to get into playoffs, and the division's all but clinched. How hard is it to stay focused for the next two?
You know, it's, I'm not going to lie to you. I think some guys, I've talked to some guys, they like, you know, they want the playoffs to start. So, but this is all part of maturity and, you know, you got to deal with these things, and it's a business-like game for us tomorrow. That's the way you got to approach it, and you know, you got to continue with the good habits. That's really what you got to, you know, that's really what it comes down to.
You've called Demko a rock,
yeah,
and you profess not to know a lot about the position because that's not your job. But you've played with some big goalies. You played with Hextall. You played with Barrasso. Do you see some similarities in the way that Demko just owns the cage, and if he sees it, he's probably going to stop?
Yeah, just his temperament. Like, the big-time goalies, you can just tell, you know, when there's pressure hits you, they're not flipping and flopping. They're not diving all over. They continue with their style. You know, like, Demmer's a big goalie. He's he just looks big in the net. Doesn't matter if the team's all over us or if they're not. He stays in his who he is. That's why, you know, that's why I love him, is that he is who he is at, during any part of the game, if that answers your question.
Goaltending's everything during the season, correct, but in the playoffs, it's everything. Do you think you got an added advantage?
Well, I mean, listen, going into the year, I knew what I had. I mean, you know, part of your system is designed a little bit with your goaltending too, right? So when you have a rock like that, you make sure that you you have some good foundation around them. That's the way you got to look at it.
Jim and Patrick did a great job in the offseason and during the season to really bolster your blue line. Size matters in the playoffs. Do you like what you could put out there for your three pairings, and what makes them effective, especially when the game changes in the playoffs?
Well, I think, you know, when you play a team, you know, seven times, it could be seven times, whatever, you're going against the same guys. It's a little bit of war attrition. You know, it's heavy for it. Guys that usually don't hit usually hit now. I mean, everybody starts to play a little more uncomfortable. So bigger D, you know, protecting the guts of the ice. You know, it helps having those type of guys. So, you know, we have a bunch of those guys. So it we'll see if it works. But I believe the way we've defended this year with those big guys is going to help us in the playoffs.
Rick Quinn mentioned that not only some of these new pieces added were great on the ice, but the character and the way that they fit in with the group. How important is how tight this group is in your experience going forward into the playoffs? How meaningful is that?
Yeah, and Huggy's right. It's in the dressing room, they're selfless guys. You know, they're very unselfish guys. You know, the guys that we acquired, they don't really think of stats. They want to win. And even when we've had some hectic times this year, those guys have been really steady. You know, kind of low maintenance guys for me to coach. You know, those guys they don't complain. You know, if they don't get enough ice time, they're not knocking on my door. They're just low maintenance guys. That's why we acquired them.
Further to Kate's question and getting on to Ben's as well regarding Thatcher, chatting with the guys in the room, they have so much respect for the way that he's come back from yet another injury. Aside from what he's going to do in the net for you because he's so skilled, just having him back and the way that he's worked, giving the lift to the team?
Yeah, I think that's a huge part. Since he's been out, you know, he's at the rink twice a day. He's by himself sometimes with a therapist. He's here at 7 a.m. He's here at 7 o'clock, like 7 p.m. He's worked really hard to get to this position, and, you know, like really hard. He's probably accelerated the process because he worked so hard. I think that's contagious, and it just shows other players, you know, the dedication and how bad he wanted to come back and help this team.
Lastly, Holmes has been here for 24 games now. For you guys and your coaching staff, how different is it from game one that he played to this point in the season, how you guys can figure out the best way to utilize him?
Well, I think last game, I thought his game was really good. I thought he was one of our better players. You know, it's hard to explain right now in a media scrum, but there's certain decision-making. I watch what he does where some other, you know, I'm not saying our team, but some lower IQ players would dive in or do something different. He does a subtle thing. I'm like, wow, that was a good play. It doesn't, might not notice to the public, but I notice those things where it slows down the other team's option to get to, you know, whatever the play is. And I think that's what he did last game for us. I know there's three or four crucial situations where, you know, he didn't dive in because one of our other players dove in and he backed the guy up. I think that's huge, especially in the playoffs, because, you know, goals are critical, right? You know, a bad read can be critical in a game.
You talked about your different third line combinations, Rick, and having him in the middle with Joshua and Garland.
Yeah.
I know McDavid didn't play Saturday, but Draisaitl really didn't get a lot when they were matched up against that line again.
Yeah, I like that line. I like that line. I like, you know, it was something in my head a couple weeks ago, even though Lindy was out. I just think it falls. And I just think it's a good matchup line for me. Not so much even hard matchups, but it just slots us well. You know, I think we won that way this year with our depth and playing more four line than loading up. That's what I believe.
When you talk about his reads, is it the way he angles people off, Lindy, or what does he do exceptionally well?
Well, I think obviously, you know, listen, he won those. Draisaitl is one of the best faceoff guys. I think he went three in a row there. I mean, that's hard to do. You know, so you take the draws out of it. Yeah, just more of a knowing when to leave the middle of the ice to confront somebody, or whether, hey, I better stay in the middle of the ice and give the guy some time because somebody made a wrong read. I think that's where he's really gifted.
Rick, last week you had said that you might consider the idea of keeping Silov's around and three goalies.
Yeah.
He's up on an emergency recall. Yeah. There's got to be some sort of transaction here. Does the organization have to balance it, though, with the idea that he could play playoff hockey in the American Hockey League?
Yeah, I don't know how that works. That's above my pay grade, but that's a good question. I, you know, You do like to have three goalies, especially during the playoffs, for practice time too, because of the starter. You don't want him in the net a lot during practice. So that's a question I got to talk to Patrick, and we'll go through all that stuff. Yeah, good question.
Can I ask you about Hoglander and how you've seen his play of late, just as a, you know, an option with Petey? Do you think he's as active as maybe as he was a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, I think Hoggy, you know, I think this is a new territory for Hoggy because I've played him higher in the lineup the last, you know, was it 2 months, whatever it is. And I think sometimes Hoggy's got to, you know, I know when he plays a simple game that's at his best. I still love his motor. I still think there's some great stuff. I mean, he's had a hell of a year for us. But now there's uncharted waters. Like, he's playing in a higher role, and sometimes he's got to be careful that he doesn't try to play like he's a top six. I hate to say it that way. He's just got to be Hoggy. If he's Hoggy, that's what he's good. But if he tries to be something he's not, he gets in trouble. He starts losing his man. You know, he changes on the wrong time. Little things like that I've seen a little bit, but they're correctable. And he's done a hell of a job for us.
Rick, with the combination of Joshua and Garland, you've had them together all season long. Your confidence surely is building throughout the season. And then what's it at right now, and what are you seeing from them at this point in the season that was maybe different than at the halfway point?
Well, their body of work. I mean, I'd be crazy to ever split those guys up. I mean, they've been terrific for us, you know. You know, those, you know, whoever you're playing with, they've usually, you know, tilted the ice or at least been neutral. Like, you know, very rarely they're on the bad video, right? Because they're very good chemistry wise. So now you have a really good hockey player, Lindholm, playing with them. So it's I think they'll feed off that.
Is it so much about chemistry? Is it the style of play that they both have? Because it's a different style those two play. Like, what makes the chemistry work so well for them?
Well, Gars likes to hold on to the pucks a lot, right? He's good in the corners. And Dakota knows that. So Dakota can position himself or play off that. Maybe some other players that want the puck a lot more have a tough time playing with Gars, I guess. I don't know. But I have to give Dakota a lot of credit because, Dakota, I don't know how many assists Garley's got on Dakota's goals, but Dakota, I think Garley said Dakota owes him dinner for his next contract because he has given him some tap-ins this year. So, yeah, they've done well.
As we enter the final week here, how do you as a coach kind of keep the players motivated when there might be some that are focused on the playoffs, especially if you clinch tonight?
Yeah, I think you keep, you guys know I say it all the time, but day-to-day stuff, very short points in the meetings. Don't give them a lot of stuff every day. Get them to the rink. And have them here a couple hours and get them out. I think if you give long meetings, you start talking about the playoffs and, you know, what ifs. I think that's when people get antsy. So we're trying to be more direct and shorter stuff and get guys out of here so they can get home. Don't get me wrong. You come to the rink, you work hard, but then you try to get home to your family and kind of unplug yourself till the intensity starts.
And kind of around the league, we've already started seeing some coaches sitting players or talking about sitting players. How does that conversation happen with competitors like Hughes, Petey, or Miller, where you say, you know, tonight we're going to give you a little bit of a rest?
Yeah, I haven't even thought of that stuff. Whenever the game's over tomorrow, we'll probably talk about that stuff. But that's not something we're really I'm not really focused on that stuff yet.
Rick, one final thought, though, in the fact that, you know, there's going to be a lot of guys playing their first playoff game here. Next week, there's a few people who got to play in the bubble, not the same experience. Channeling that excitement, when will you allow them to really think about it and enjoy it before they go about doing their business?
Well, I think you got to enjoy what you've accomplished, 100%. And everybody's different. The only advice I give them, players, is whatever you've done so far, be normal. Like, do the same thing. Don't, I'm not going to bore you. I have a good story that I learned for myself playing in the Stanley Cup Finals, and I learned from it, and it helped me win a Stanley Cup. So I'll share a story with them, like, from experience, what would help them. I don't think if you're a guy that gets 9 hours sleep or 8.5 hours, all of a sudden the stakes rise. Oh, I better get 10 hours in. If I don't get 10 hours in, I'm going to play. You can't think that way. If you go to your guy that goes to dinner at night, go to dinner at night. Whatever you do, don't change. I think that's really I think from experience that helps.
Like you were saying, how do you use your personal experience to get the team ready?
Yeah, I think with Adam Foote being around, Sergei Gonchar, the twins, we have a lot of experience. I think grabbing guys, or, you know, we have meetings, even sitting down at lunch with a guy and telling your stories that way. I'm not sure if I'm a big storyteller with a group all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't mind it, but I think personal stories one-on-one or with a couple of guys are more meaningful, I think.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet speaking to a lot of things, you know, confirming that Thatcher Demko will be back in the crease for tomorrow's game against Calgary, and also just looking ahead to getting his team prepped for the playoffs, and just a ton of praise from Tocchet for Thatcher Demko about the work that Demko's put to get back to this point, to be on the verge of coming back. And you can tell how excited Rick Tocchet is to have his number one goalie back and ready to go. And as he said, you know, he'll play. He didn't want to commit to the game on Thursday either, said he'll play tomorrow and then we'll go from there. But you can tell a lot of excitement from Rick Tocchet to have Demko even at that point.
Yeah, and why not? I mean, Demko's real good.
It's pretty good.
Real good. I don't know why I'm doing the Willie DeJardin bit. The Canucks have been getting, like, since the All-Star break, so this sample includes Demko for at least a portion of it, 18th best goaltending in the league, 5-on-5, since sort of the last 31 games of the season, the second half. And with Demko hurt, it's been more like 880. I'm sure that number went up a little bit thanks to Casey DeSmith's stellar performance, but wow. Actually, they've got the 9th best goaltending in the league since Demko got hurt.
At 5-on-5.
At 5-on-5, 920.
That's wild.
Pretty good. Not bad. Not bad. And, you know, this is one thing I often think about. I remember when I was sort of first getting into hockey from an analytics standpoint and, like, really thinking about it a lot. Jonathan Quick was a goalie who would have an elite season and then, like, an okay season and then an elite season and then an okay season. And that was in contrast with someone like Luongo, right, who was always like, but, you know, Jonathan Quick had the cups. Mm-hmm. So everyone just was like, well, Quick's better. And I was like, no, the trick is to do it year after year after year. And then I remember checking it and looking, like, since Quick had become the starter for LA, the team was like had the second best overall save percentage in the NHL, right? And the only one better was Montreal, right? And Carey Price, honestly, although he hit like a second peak, like 2014 to 2016, Carey Price was ludicrous. But he before that had been sort of similar, where workhorse goalie, but sort of not elite year after year. And yet Quick was, you know, 72 games, 61 games, 69 games, 72 games, 68 games, 64 games through his prime. You know, the 56-game season in 2013-14, he played 49 games. Like, he was just always there. And so, again, whether Quick was elite himself, the fact that he played so often at the level he did meant that the team's goaltending during his era was superb.
Mm.
And that's what really matters at the end of the day, especially if you're eating innings the way that a workhorse starter does. And I was sort of thinking about it after listening to the Demko scrum last week, right? And him talking about his aggressive return. And we've talked a little bit about this, you know, the fact that Demko's played a lot of games in seasons that he's played a lot of games. He's sustained injuries sort of late in the year and on and on. And I just was kind of checking it. And like, if you go to that a pandemic abbreviated campaign, right? The Canucks are actually 18th in goaltending all situations since Demko sort of took over as a starter. And yet he's been amazing almost every single one of those years, which is just something to keep in mind about like the impact of durability. One thing that I think is fair to say is, between DeSmith and Seelovs, even though fans occasionally got frustrated with it, I think Vancouver's backup goaltending, their goaltending depth, like, genuinely held the fort this year. And certainly DeSmith sort of put an exclamation mark on that, especially after struggling in a couple consecutive starts on Saturday.
I mean, DeSmith, you think he's going to – we'll see if he gets another game here, but in all likelihood, he could end up bookending his season with massive performances against the Edmonton Oilers and just, like – that's almost earning your salary right there. Like the two performances he turned in on the road against the Oilers to get those points.
Those results go a different way. We're still sweating the Pacific Division.
Or possibly like waving it goodbye if those results go a different way, right? So like those are huge, huge games for Casey DeSmith. Yeah, his numbers dipped a little bit during the middle of the season there, but I just think you look at his overall body of work, it's hard to be too disappointed with what Casey DeSmith gave the Canucks over the course of this year. Okay, we're going to wrap it up there for today. As mentioned, it's the Canucks and the Calgary Flames tomorrow in the final home game at Rogers Arena, possibly 1 week before game one. We'll see. Of course, the latest from Elliot Friedman was that he thinks the Canucks might start the playoffs on April 23rd. So that would be a game one hosting date for the Canucks. And of course, if you're watching the Out of Town scoreboard tonight, the Canucks could clinch the Pacific Division if the Oilers do not beat the San Jose Sharks tonight. So there you go. You get a chance to cheer on the Sharks and also pay attention to what Nashville is doing against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Never miss a chance to
Never
cheer
miss
on
a chance
the Sharks.
To cheer on the San Jose Sharks.
You put
Sharks.
On like Deep Blue Sea. You're like, go, go, go. Get that chef.
Just really put yourself in the mindset of a frustrated Sharks fan.
Who also is like genetically engineered to be even smarter.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Sure. Like Deep Blue Sea.
Do you get the reference?
Deep Blue Sea, the movie.
Yes. Okay, good.
Yeah. I explicitly made the reference.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but he was like kind of talking like you weren't sure.
No, I got it.
Everyone's seen Deep Blue Sea.
That's like a TBS special from back in the day.
Is it?
I don't know. It used to be on all the time. Yeah,
dude,
I think
it's got
right.
one of the iconic Samuel L. Jackson
it
death
sure,
moments.
It sure does.
In movie
it
history.
Sure does. All right. Perfect note to leave it on. We'll be back tomorrow here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.